News Radio 930 WBEN.
This young man right here. I'm going to let him use my special mic. All right, what's your name?
Terrence Scott.
Huh? Terrence Scott, what do you have to say?
I have to say why people hate you.
Tom Bowerly.
Bring money to Big Rock in Mojave Desert at dawn.
What?
It's live.
Your language is offensive.
It's local.
How dare you? She's a nice lady.
It's Tom Bowerly.
My name's Alan and I bought a giraffe.
On News Radio 930 WBEN.
Well, you are in for a special treat, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I have been unable to convince Ringo Starr to come on the show. Sir Paul McCartney, I don't even think I'd be able to get through to Sir Paul's people. John and George are obviously out of earthly hailing distance, but we have somebody I know you're going to enjoy because he is a guy who was actually there behind the scenes when the Beatles came to the United States, and it wasn't just a question of his interviewing the Beatles. If I'm not mistaken, our own Sandy Beach interviewed the Beatles, but Art Schreiber, he went on tour with the Beatles, their first grand U.S. tour, and he basically was one of the boys. And I am really looking forward to finding out what was going on behind the scenes with the band, as we all are familiar with seeing the black and white footage from back then, the occasional color footage from back then, and you know, you kind of wonder, hey, what was going on when everybody was cheering out of cheering range? And Art Schreiber is here to talk about that. And in studio, I also have brought somebody I know you enjoy. His name is Gary Astridge, and Gary is a drummer of great repute. He is known to Ringo Starr and Ringo Starr's people. Gary is the world's leading authority on Ringo's Beatles drum kits, and I couldn't think of a better guy to bring in to co-host this hour on News Radio 930 WBEN. And, of course, your questions are welcome at 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. And Art, it's a pleasure meeting you. I've listened to your work from all those years ago, and it's good to see you in the flesh. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. It's good being here. It's great being back in Buffalo, New York.
And Gary, you're an old and familiar face, but nonetheless, it's also good seeing you anyway.
Nice seeing you as well.
Of course. Gary Astridge, the world's foremost authority on Ringo Starr. First things first, Art, for me, and that is, out of all the reporters in the world, how did you end up going on tour with the Beatles, and did you know at the time that they were more than a passing fad, that they would set the benchmark for music, not just for the 60s, but for generations beyond?
No, I didn't. And what I do in these Beatles presentations I'm, you know, performing tomorrow for the National Federation of the Blind, the New York affiliate over in Niagara Falls, I tell that story of, because that is the most often asked question I receive. How did you get on the Beatles tour? And then I also, I won't tell you tonight, but I will. I do tell in my performance how Paul McCartney saved my career, and he did. But let me tell you how it happened. I was news director of KYW, which is now in Philadelphia, but it used to be in Cleveland. And I was news director at Cleveland in 1964. And I came back from lunch one day, and I stopped in the program director's office, and all the jocks were sitting around, the music director, the production manager, and it was like a wake. It was dead silence. I said, "What happened?" And somebody said, "HK got the Beatles." That meant WHK, our major competitor, because you got Tom, in those days, in 64, AM radio was king. There wasn't FM. And as you remember, you're not old enough to remember, but as you have read about, companies could only own 7 AM radio stations, one to a market. So the radio ratings intensity was enormous.
And it was a fight for number one. And we were fighting it out with WHK. So when I learned that WHK now was bringing the Beatles in, that meant, wow, they're going to get to be number one. And I don't know what possessed me, but I said, looked at the PD, the program director, and I said, why don't you put me on the Beatles tour? Well, we were owned by Westinghouse Broadcasting Company, which was a big, major broadcasting company in those days. And somehow they got me on the tour. I was one of two American reporters, Larry Kane, who later became the anchor man for KYW when it was in Philadelphia on television. He and I were the two Americans, and there were three British reporters and two photographers.
And you, Art, had open access, free access. Yeah. You had VIP. You were basically part of the band.
Yeah, well, that's true. And it was difficult for me because, see, I wasn't a music guy. I didn't cover entertainment. I covered for Westinghouse Broadcasting Company politics, civil rights, and man's space. And I didn't know who the Beatles were, believe it or not, when I said, put me on the Beatles tour. And in fact, I went home, told my wife, I said, we got to go see Hard Day's Night. She said, what do you mean? I said, we'll just go to a drive-in because we can't get a babysitter. And then I fell asleep.
All right, now Gary, anytime you want to pop in, just raise your hand, and I will look over in your direction. Okay. So, the first meeting with the Beatles when they realize that you will be covering them coast to coast on their tour, do you have any recollection of any awkwardness, anything that was said, or whether you were meant to feel welcomed, or put us in your mind?
Well, first, let me explain that whenever a station in Westinghouse wanted to cover a national story, you had to get permission from the bureau chief in Washington. And so when the program director and the manager called Jim Snyder, the bureau chief, and said, we want to put Schreiber on the Beatles tour, he said, no way. He said, he's got to cover the Democratic Convention in Atlantic City. And the reason I was, of course, I covered politics, and I was assigned to cover the Democratic Convention, but I had been assigned to the Alabama delegation because I covered Martin Luther King so much, traveled with them all through the South on the Selma to Montgomery March, the Meredith March across Mississippi, and I was with him a lot. So I got to know the Alabama principals in the Democratic delegation. And so Bull Connor, the famous police chief of Birmingham and later the head of the Highway Patrol under Governor George Wallace. So I knew those, and Snyder was not about to give up allowing me to get off from covering the Democratic Convention. So the compromise went all the way to the president of the company, and I didn't cover the first week. They started out on the West Coast, came then to New York to perform at the old Forest Hills Tennis Complex, and I joined them that second night, and I met them that afternoon, got there. They were terrific. They were very cordial. And met Derek Taylor, the press agent, who was on that tour. And so we hit it off right away. And the second night, John Lennon said to me, Ott, do you play Monopoly? And I said, yeah, I play with my kids. He said, I got a board. And he said, George and I play. These other guys won't play. Well, the reason I found out was that the others played poker. And, Tom, I, in my first paycheck in the Army, which was $30 a month, I lost it all in a poker game. And I've never played poker since.
Okay, this is absolutely riveting and fascinating. And, you know, I mentioned before that, if I'm not mistaken, our own Sandy Beach interviewed the Beatles. And I'll go one step further. Our morning news anchor, a guy by the name of John Zach, also spent a bit of time with Dr. Martin Luther King and had the opportunity to interview Dr. King on several occasions. And, you know, the parallels between listening to you and listening to John talking about these great Americans you had the chance to interview and this civil rights history you saw unfolding before your very eyes are just amazing to me as a broadcaster and as somebody with a great love and appreciation for American history, and moreover, as somebody who regards Dr. King as one of the greatest Americans ever to have lived.
Absolutely.
Stand by, because we have much more coming up. Some elements never change, Art, like traffic and weather, and of course the need for revenue. And these days, of course, we have a digital platform known as the Internet. We are talking with Art Schreiber. He was on tour with the Beatles in 64. Right now, a guy with traffic who went to school with Bob Lanier. And here is, we're going to name drop all day today. Here's Alan Harris. We're talking with Art Schreiber. And by the way, something we have not mentioned yet is Art woke up one morning totally blind. And he has a book called Out of Sight, Blind and Doing All Right by Art Schreiber. And you know, back in high school, those of you who went to Kenmore East may remember Lola Reppenhagen coming into school along with Mr. Reppenhagen, and Lola was blind, and for many of us, that was our first experience with a real, live, blind person sharing her life story. So it's good to see Art in studio with us, and Gary wants to chime in, has been chomping at the bit. Gary Astridge.
What I wanted to ask was that with what you said, you really had no idea about the details of the Beatles. But when you met them and when you had spent time with them, could you pick up on the charisma that they had as individuals and as a group? And how were they? Were they any different, like when they were performing, you know, before a show, after a show?
Well, you're right, Gary. I did pick up on the fact they were just, of course, you got to understand, now I was 36 years old. Mm-hmm. I probably, outside of one correspondent from their hometown, who, by the way, was named George Harrison, mm-hmm. was the columnist for their hometown newspaper. He was probably in his 50s, maybe. And then I was 56. The rest of those
36.
Guys, well, 36, were much younger. But so the Beatles probably looked at me as being an old man.
Right.
But they also were very, very young guys who were enthusiastic about their music. Paul and John on the plane constantly collaborated about writing, and they were writing music all the time, except John, when he found out what I had done in traveling with Jack Kennedy, Martin Luther King, he couldn't understand what was happening in America. None of the rest of us could either. The civil rights battles were going on at that time. Kennedy had been assassinated. So John wanted to talk to me about politics, about what was going on sociologically in this country, and we did not talk about music. But Ringo, by the way, I had great conversations with Ringo. I don't know, you must know, and Tom, you must know, when the Beatles performed on that first tour, everybody threw something at them.
Jelly beans.
On the stage. Of course, jelly beans was the most common. But cake, a much cake. And I wish I had my cuts that I will use tomorrow in the performance.
We actually have some. that we have snagged, Art. And we're going to play a bit of you speaking with John Lennon about all the stuff that was thrown on stage, including the cake.
All right.
And I want to get back, when we come back after the break, to the idea of the off-air camaraderie, because I've always been under the opinion and belief that John and Paul hung out together. And as you said, you know, they were collaborating, writing music. I have to find out if you were present during the writing of any great hits, number one. And number two, that Ringo and George, they kind of hung out because they weren't John and Paul. Don't go anywhere. Lots to come on News Radio 930 WBEN. The voice you're hearing is that of Art Schreiber, and he was on tour with the Beatles in 64. Not just an interviewer, but on tour with them.
Oh yeah, I tell you something, I think you'll understand.
John, what were they throwing up on a stage in Philadelphia last night?
Everything bar the limbs, I think.
I know jelly beans were thrown. Anything else?
Jelly beans, yeah. There was a sort of carton of milk, or half-empty carton of milk, a bit of cake I had stood in. Not much fun, you know.
How about all the cakes that you get? Do you like cake?
We're not all that keen on. We're going off it gradually. There's mania for cakes, and it's the thought, you see. And if we do get stuck with a lot of cakes, which sometimes happens, we always give them to somebody or other.
You were saying the Americans must have a great yen for cakes, don't they?
Well, either that or they're very good cooks. They like making cakes.
Somebody asked you in the news conference yesterday about Pittsburgh. What was your remark? They said that they wouldn't let you in any of the hotels in Pittsburgh.
Oh, I said I didn't think we were going to I didn't know we were going to Pittsburgh, I think.
And you, which is really true. You don't know all the cities that you're going on. You just kind of get on a plane and go to the next stop.
And that is my in-studio guest, Art Schreiber, speaking with John Lennon and Gary Astridge from BBC. They're playing a show tomorrow night at the Riv in North Tonawanda. I guess there's about 100 seats still available, which I don't doubt will sell out. BBC is an amazing, not only Beatles cover band, but they just play the hell out of the Zombies and... any great group you can possibly imagine. The Hollies from the 1960s and early 70s, and I can't say enough good things about BBC.
Thanks.
So, Art, I guess I'm going to be the one to ask the question. I've heard rumors my entire life that people connected with the Beatles had designated tasks of going outside of the hotels and, shall we say, rounding up female companionship for the boys so that they might, shall we say, unwind in an adult way. What was going on behind the scenes? Because, obviously, the Beatles could have pretty much had anyone they wanted.
Yes, you didn't have to work very hard to round up anybody that wanted to spend time with the Beatles.
Then I have a question. Was it you? Was he the guy that was looking?
Art, were you the procurer of these young women?
Oh, okay. All right.
In fact, I, and this has been written, lots of things have been written. For example, when Larry Kane wrote his book, Ticket to Ride, he called me up and he said, "Your memory is better than mine. I'm going to pick your brains and I'll give you credit," and which he did, all the stories that we reminisced. By the way, there's a new book out on the Beatles written by Ivor Davis, who was one of the British correspondents, and it's called Beatles and Me, and it talks a lot about what was going on behind the scenes. But the thing was, when you asked me about the music. You're looking at one of the most stupid individuals ever, because when John and Paul, now John and I sat together on the plane all the time. Paul would come up, then they would be writing music. The floor of the plane was littered with scrap paper, music paper that they had discarded. Do you know that I didn't pick up one piece? And think what we could have had today. So that was what was happening. But you weren't thinking about it in those days.
I mean, you had no, despite the charisma of which you spoke before, you had no way of knowing in 1964 that the Beatles were going to be anything but a flash in the pan and a passing cultural phenomenon.
That's right.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, when you think about it now, when it was time for you to say goodbye, I'm strongly assuming there had to be a little part of you that felt down, like, oh my God, the party's still going, and I'm going back home.
In fact, you can hear them. You remember now, in those days, no ramps at airports. The steps came out of the fuselage of the plane. You walked up the steps, and there was a platform right there before you entered the plane, and the Beatles stood on that platform, and you can hear them. I have a cut. I don't know whether you have it.
But we do.
I have a cut saying, Biot, Biot, and that was very, very difficult for me.
I think we're going to save that one until about 54, Ryan, until the end of the program, just to make it appropriate. Do you, off the top of your head, Art, remember as you were on that plane with the Beatles and Paul and John were collaborating? Do you know of any of the songs that were actually written in your presence?
No, I don't. I have no idea. I know Gary must just be shaking his head.
I am.
So.
did they have their instruments with them? Did they practice at all in flight?
No.
Oh, so there was nothing you could hear. Or how about when they were singing? I'm sure that you could hear them trying to harmonize or work on.
No, I never heard them ever sing at the hotel room. Their suite. I never saw them have any instruments in their suite. And believe me, in the when I played Monopoly with John and George night after night after night, I know this is hard to believe, but I never saw anybody smoke a weed. George was a chain smoker of cigarettes. We didn't even order drinks. We brought to the room. There was never a Coke drunk that I ever saw, or any alcoholic beverage. All night long, we didn't. We just didn't drink.
Well, Gary, it was, if I'm not mistaken, didn't the Beatles start smoking weed after they met Bob Dylan?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the story.
And that's true. In fact, if you read Larry Kane's book, Ticket to Ride, it was the second tour that I was not on, but Larry was. And it was that tour that John really got into drugs, and there was more of it on that second tour than there was on the first.
Well, actually, they were supposed, after Ed Sullivan, the story goes that they were supposed to come to Buffalo and play at our auditorium, but the major station in town at the time, KB Radio, didn't want to fork over, what was it,
five
Gary?
$5,000, maybe?
I want to say like $2,500, maybe $5,000 to bring in the Beatles.
Oh,
do
no,
you believe
it was
that?
$25,000.
Oh, $25,000, okay. Yeah. That was the going rate.
That's what WHK paid to bring them to Cleveland.
What we were talking about is a local radio station, AM, WKBW, was offered the Beatles the night after the Ed Sullivan show, and they turned it down because it was too much of a risk.
Can you imagine the general manager a few years later?
Yeah, well, they did play Toronto. That's the closest they came.
I was with them in Toronto and Montreal.
Art, just I guess some human interest questions that I have. I mean, we all have, I think, our preconceived notions of what these guys were like. I mean, you just talked about John Lennon being very interested in the sociological aspects of America and what was taking place during some very tumultuous times. Describe the personalities and the things you liked or did not like about the Beatles. Let's start off with John.
Well, John was... If anyone was an intellectual, John was it. He was extremely bright, extremely well-read, and knew a lot about what was going on in America. Didn't understand it, as he kept saying he didn't. But he did, was well aware of what was going on. So John was very bright. And I know it's hard for you Beatles music fans, like Gary, like you probably, Tom. See, I was a newsman. I was covering big stories, the president's campaigns, civil rights, man's space. I wasn't into music. And I was the last guy in the world probably to have, should have been on the Beatles tour. But, so I didn't get into the music business with them. We talked about other things. So John was like that. George didn't talk hardly at all. He was extremely quiet. We would play Monopoly all night long, and I would wager that George didn't say 20 words. He was the banker. John always accused him of cheating. I don't think he did, but although Ivor Davis says he did, Ivor played Monopoly with them when they were out on the West Coast, which I wasn't there, and Ivor quit because he said he didn't like to play Monopoly that much. I love Monopoly, and I just played with those two guys all the time. But anyway, they had a lot of fun, and John, Paul was, see, the women seemed to love Paul more than anybody, although Ringo was very popular with the women, too. But Paul was, he was the darling of all the women. It seemed to me more, and he and Ringo were the sex symbols that I witnessed.
How do you like that? Yes. And Paul, was he a talkative fellow? Was he amiable? Was he?
Yes. What was written, for example, Paul was angry with me for a while, and that's why even more amazing that he did save my career, but when we were in Dallas, see, in those days in the South, you couldn't walk into a bar and buy a drink. They were dry, you know, what they call dry.
Right.
And but in those days, if you checked into a hotel, you then became a member of their private club, and you could buy a drink. Well, the cocktail waitresses at the hotel we stayed at in Dallas were dressed similarly to Playboy bunnies. And they had a photo op. They came up to the Beatles suite and were taking pictures and et cetera. And when the girls were leaving, Paul said to me, get me her. And I said, get her yourself. I'm not your pimp. And he really was ticked about that. But later he apologized and, in fact, wrote above his photo something about my wife, who he met, and then he even said sorry. He wrote the word sorry.
Well, let's stick with him.
What a great story. And I'm going to let Gary ask you about Ringo.
Yeah. What can you tell us about him?
Wonderful sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. Still to this day.
A very dry, subtle sense of humor. I loved sitting with him. I never did on the plane, but when we would go from, I remember going out to Kennedy Airport when they were leaving. Ringo and I sat together on the shuttle or whatever it was, and we just had a wonderful time talking. I don't know whether you have the cut, but I have a cut of asking Ringo to what the difference between American disc jockeys and British disc jockeys.
I think we have that bit of audio, and Ryan, let it rip.
Sitting at your vantage point on stage, which is above your other members of the quartet, do you escape all these things that are thrown?
Most of them. A few of them get through, you know, when we get the sort of the baseball players in.
The only time I have a bad time is when there's an audience at the back as well as in front of us, you know, because I sort of get them all bang, bang on the back of my head, you know. I turn around and you can never tell who it is, you see.
I have noticed that when any of you shake your head, this sends the crowd into a higher pitch of hysterics than they ordinarily are. Now, do you feel this and every once in a while deliberately shake your head in order to get them to scream a little louder?
Well, I shake mine because I can't do nothing else, really. You know, I just sort of sit in there, so I'm...
Your brain's back into position.
So George.
You know, George has to shake my brains back in position. I ain't got no brains. Well, you know, that's all I can do is sort of just move about, you know.
Do you get a thrill out of shaking your head and hearing them squeal out?
Well, I've shaken my head for about 5 years now, so it's just like normal, you know. I just shake my head. I'm sorry.
The number that you are featured on, and when they turn around, and George and John and Paul turn around and point to you, yeah, and everybody squeals.
And then turn away.
What do you have any kind of a reaction, feel, after you go through this night after night?
No, well, I love it, you see, because it's sort of my one little bit, and I have sort of a yell. I wouldn't call it a sing. And I have good fun, you see. I enjoy it.
All right, that number, was that Boys or was that something else?
Yeah, that was talking about when they throw things and so forth. But no, then I did ask him at another time because he could imitate American disc jockeys and British disc jockeys, and he did just briefly on the cut, and he really is. Well, he just could do it very well.
I wish we had that audio. The song he sang, though, do you remember which one that was?
No. What was it, Gary?
Actually, I don't know. It could have been Boys.
Yeah. We saw him do Boys at Art Park this past summer, and you know, seeing him do it live was just, I got to tell you, it was a great thrill. Yeah. We're talking with Art Schreiber. Gary Astridge is also here from Buffalo Beetle Connection, great Beatles tribute band. They're playing tomorrow night at the Riviera Theater in North Tonawanda. Art Schreiber was with the Beatles on their tour in 1964, and he's got a book. You can go to my Facebook page, tom.bowerly, Out of Sight. Blind and Doing All Right. We need to break on WBEN. We'll be back to wrap things up momentarily with Art Schreiber. We are talking with Art Schreiber, and he was on tour with the Beatles in 1964. And off air, just an awesome story about Charlie Finley offering the Beatles a lot of money if they play just 5 minutes more. And Art, please pick up the story. This is amazing.
Well, because the Beatles performed 30 minutes at every concert on that first tour. And so Charlie came into their Beatles suite at the old Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City. He had paid to bring the Beatles to Kansas City to perform at the baseball stadium there. And he said, the first mistake he made when he walked in, he said, "Boys, I've got a proposition." Well, they hated to be called boys. And that was his first mistake. And John Lennon sat opposite him, and Lennon really was the leader. And when Charlie offered $5,000 more, John Lennon kept shaking his head no.
For five more minutes.
And five more minutes. And Finley said, five more minutes, and he had all five fingers up. And he said, five more minutes, boys. And then he got to 10,000. Five more minutes, $10,000. He got up to 50 grand, and Lennon still shook his head.
This is $1,964. Yeah. This is amazing.
Insane money.
And Brian Epstein was standing at the door. I thought Brian Epstein was going to have a heart attack because he loved money, and he was the one that was missing out, because I think if Brian would have been there, I mean, sat there, but Lennon said no. But Brian, I know, would have accepted probably before he ever got to 50.
That is amazing. An astonishing story. We're going to be saying goodbye to you in about a minute, Art, but I have a question about your feelings as somebody who toured with President Kennedy, who had interviewed Martin Luther King. How does it feel that you're on the air now talking about a music act and not people who were truly more significant in American history?
It's been the story of my life ever since I traveled with the Beatles. It was the most difficult assignment I ever had. I lost 3 suits on that tour, a couple of typewriters, and several tape recorders. But I'm grateful that I had that opportunity to be with the Beatles, and it was wonderful being with Martin Luther King and Jack Kennedy and all the principals and politics and world leaders. But I'll tell you, the Beatles were a great, refreshing treat for me after covering all that heavy politics.
Gary, I can't thank you enough for coming in. I mean, I wish we had about 3 hours or more to talk about yeah. this. Art, I am delighted to have met you. Your picture and information about you and your book is on my Facebook page, and we're going to leave with a bit of audio of you saying goodbye to the Beatles. Know yourself, people.
Thank you.
And there the Beatles are entering the plane as the fans stand on the concourse above, screaming and yelling and waving goodbye. As you hear them in the background, because the Beatles are soon to depart for England, ending this month-long American-Canadian tour, a most fabulously successful tour. More than $1 million the Beatles have collected on this tour, as well as thousands upon thousands of fans with that familiar scream and chant.